Welcome, Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. I'd like to welcome everybody listening all around the world, all across the United States, hither and thither, to and fro, back and forth, up and down, east and west, north and south, far and near. This is Coast to Coast AM. We are coming to you live from Los Angeles from the Coast to Coast studios, where the lights are dark. Turn them down where you are at. We have a great show lined up tonight. We have Ron Felber with us, and his new book is The Mojave Incident. It's the true story of Elise and Tom Gifford, who were abducted in the Mojave Desert while on vacation. We've got the complete story tonight. It's a story that you probably haven't heard before, and you're going to want to seriously get close to the speakers. It's going to be one of those nights. And then, first up, we have Chase Kletsky of MUFON, and she will be with us here in just a second. She heads up the SAT team over at MUFON, and she is the author of two popular books, Admissible, The Field Investigator's Manual with Richard Dolan, and the first children's book about UFOs, Are Aliens Really Real? So stay tuned. It's going to be great. But first up, we've got an update from John Richards of SETI. John Richards is a senior software engineer at the SETI Institute. He's the guy that points the dishes and tries to figure out what they're going to investigate next. There's an exciting discovery that has been made by Kepler. And I would like to bring on right now John Richards of SETI. John, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you tonight? You're on the East Coast.
Yes, I'm on the East Coast. Personal business.
So, exciting stuff out there in the world of astronomy, and the news that broke last week about Kepler, it seemed to hit across mass media with a lot of assumptions made about what this could or could not be. But before we go there, you've been pointing the telescopes that way, the Allen Array, and any news to report? What have you found so far?
Other than a lot of radio frequency interference, like we often see, the computers haven't said there's anything blatant coming from that star, but it's going to take us several weeks once we gather all the data to see if we see anything within the data. Right now we're doing a second pass. We looked at this star system last week on a 3-day observation, and we're doing it again this week, and we're going to be combing through that data. So it's going to be several weeks before we really know anything.
What is it specifically, John, that you guys are looking for? Is there one specific radio band? Is it old television that, something? What is it that you guys are specifically trying to focus on?
Well, the theory is that if there's a man-made structure that is coming from something not man-made, but alien-made, I should say, from this distant star, we might see some leakage of transmission, like some of their equipment would be leaking radio signals, and that's what we would pick up. But otherwise, we might see natural phenomena coming from the star or a background star that's in the background of the star. So you really don't know, but what we're actually looking for is between 1 gigahertz and 10 gigahertz in frequency. We're looking for a very small signal that looks like it's a signal coming from that object up there.
What would tip the scales for you and SETI one way or another, natural or not natural?
The thing we're looking for is something that's not natural. We're looking for something that's very narrow band, which means it's, within a hertz or two in width, maybe has a little bit of structure, maybe not, because this star is pretty far away. And also has the correct, what they call Doppler shift. So we look for signals that have a shift in frequency that are related to maybe the source planet rotating around its sun, or our planet actually rotating towards or away from it. So you actually see a shift in frequency, and that's kind of what we're looking for to differentiate it from radio frequency interference. So we're looking for a very narrow signal that is very weak, but we can definitely see that in our data. So we think that it's going to be weak because this object is 1,500 light years away from Earth, so that's quite far away.
How many radio telescopes around the world are doing the same thing right now as SETI?
I don't know. We're the ones, we like to claim that we're the ones who jumped on it first, but and there's going to be more to follow. But I assume that right now we may be the only ones at this moment, but I know there's going to be other ones. But I don't know the statistics or actually which ones are going to be doing that.
When is the second pass for you going to occur? Is it next week?
Yeah, we're beginning the second pass now, and then I believe in 1 week we'll be finished with that, and then we'll be scouring through the data. So it's going to be several weeks.
Help me picture this in my own mind's eye. Are all 42 telescopes focused on KIC 846-2852?
Right now we have 20 of them. We have a subset 20 spread out through our array that are looking at these stars.
And you
It's
just
quite a
did,
good subset.
and you just did an upgrade too as well that doubles the capacity. Can you tell me about that real quick?
It hasn't doubled it yet, but we've gotten a grant from Franklin Antonio, the gentleman who is interested in helping us out, and we actually designed a new antenna feed that goes inside of each one of these dishes. And once they all get installed, which should be next summer, will be twice the sensitivity. So we're really excited, but it hasn't come quite yet. Last week we got three of them installed,
Well,
and so next month will be three more, and so on and so on.
thank you for all that you do in SETI. And the second that anything breaks, get a hold of us straight away here at Coast to Coast AM. We would love to hear either way. Which, is it natural? Is it unnatural? Which is a
Yeah.
scary way to look at things. But either way it goes, get right back to us on Coast. And all of the updates are on John's Twitter account at JRSETI. You can follow John on Twitter, and as soon as anything breaks, it'll break there and break right here on Coast to Coast. Thank you
Yes,
so
it
much,
will.
John, and have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
John Richards, he is the senior software engineer at SETI. He's the guy that points the radio telescopes to where they need to go. And we'll be back right after this tonight. Ron Felber is with us. His book is The Mojave Incident. But first up, we'll be joined by Chase Kletsky of MUFON. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. This is Coast to Coast AM. Back right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in tonight for George Knapp. It's going to be a great evening tonight. We have Ron Felber with us and his new book, The Mojave Incident, and more of that in just a bit. But first up, I'd like to welcome Chase Kletsky. Chase earned her Master Trainer, Master Instructor title while employed with the Department of Defense. Armed with a biomechanical engineer accreditation, she was responsible for designing specialized programs and the supervision of a complete success regarding force readiness, unique mission responsibilities, and elite force protection. This includes assignments with Homeland Security and private sector security forces. She joined MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, in 1996 and was selected as the Star Team Manager and Deputy Director of Investigations through 2011. She was responsible for the program design, protocols, and investigation procedures for a National Rapid Response Unit. She is also the author of two popular books, Admissible, the Field Investigator's Manual that she co-wrote with Richard Dolan, and the first of its kind, which is a children's book, and it's called Are Aliens Really Real? She is known for her boots-on-the-ground dedication to solving mysteries one case at a time. I would like to welcome to Coast AM, Chase Kletsky. Chase, good evening.
Thanks so much for having me, Jimmy. It's such a privilege.
No, the privilege is all mine, Chase. The privilege is all mine. Before we get started, Chase, I have to go here. You're a woman in a man's world, so to speak. Ufology research, and you're so respected. But is that something that you fight? Are you always looking to prove yourself because you're a woman in a man's world?
You know, this question comes up, Jimmy, and it's a great question. I just never feel that way. I'm a UFO investigator, and I just work. I never really think about being a female ufologist. To me, I just do my job. And I think sometimes you got to let, the boys be boys and have their things, and that's okay because, there's a place for everybody. And I've just never really felt like I've had to fight that. Not at all, actually. But it
Well,
is a good old boys network sometimes, and the UFO field has that reputation. I just don't have a problem with that. Maybe it's because, working with the Department of Defense, I work with submariners and spec op guys that don't work with females either. So when, little me is standing in front of these troops or these individuals, embarking out what they need to do next, it just kind of set me up to just not think about it, to go in and just do my job.
Right. And how does your experience with writing protocol for the Defense Department or Department of Defense or Homeland Security, how do you apply that knowledge back to the field investigations that you do with MUFON?
I didn't think we were going to have a partnership between the two fields, and I found that it was essential, especially with program success. And I wrote the the Star Team program, after the whole Bigelow thing collapsed. And about a year later, I was selected as Star Team manager and started from scratch. Literally wrote the program, without any protocols or knowledge of the first team, and just thought about what MUFON needed for a national rapid response unit. And that's when those skill sets came in handy. And then, of course, it came in handy just a few months ago when I designed the special assignment team for MUFON, which is a completely different investigation model that MUFON's ever used before. It's completely innovative.
Before we get to the SAT team, and it's a big discussion that we're going to have tonight. Before we get to that, what happened in your life as a youngster? You took a left or a right-hand turn somewhere and planted your feet firmly into ufology. What was that magic moment, that epiphany?
It's probably, you've heard it a million times. It was Eric Von Daniken's book, Chariots of the Gods. And I just had never read questions like that. And I was so intrigued with the whole UFO question. I got more into the boots on the ground investigations versus, the ancient biblical text. But it really was that book that sparked an imagination. But it was also a time, it was 1976 I read this book. Yes, I was a teenager. And seriously, nobody that I knew of, in that time was asking questions like this. It was unheard of. And to me, it was permission to think out of the box and be tenacious and raise your hand and, almost to be that person in the crowd, like you're in the desert with Moses, for 40 years, but you're the one after about five saying, "Hey, Mo, can I see that map for a minute?" I loved it. I loved he was asking questions I never had heard before. It was great.
The sightings have gone through a few different phases over the last 60 years, and what I mean by that is we've had the classical, the classic disc, dome on top, saucer shaped, cigar shaped, different classes of craft, and in the last, well, certainly since Belgium. But in the recent history is the Black Triangle. And you've had your own sighting of a Black Triangle. And I want you to take me through that because it's a pretty amazing event. And you were there and you saw it yourself. Did that change your opinion on what everybody else was seeing when it came to Black Triangles? The question being, is it us or them? Which comes up with every Black Triangle sighting. You had your own. So please take us through that and how did it change your opinion?
It did change my opinion because when you hear witnesses talk of the technology, it's difficult to explain sometimes. And to see something so odd, so out of place, it's, and until you've seen it yourself, it's very difficult to describe. And that's what I was missing as a UFO investigator, when my witnesses were saying it was kind of like this, or the color was almost this. And you have an entire color chart there. There's no color available that's not on that chart. And yet they were having a hard time finding it. And, you know, I think that's when I became a better investigator, is when you see something so UFO, and you know that there's just no other explanation. And there was a moment when I realized there's no way this can be ours, and whether it is or not, I'm just, at that moment, that's what it felt like. It was the strangest thing. Now, up until this point, I'd been a UFO investigator since 1996. This happened in 2010. Brutal. It was brutal. Wait time. Although I had many things I had seen that were odd, or maybe I didn't have the direct explanation, but it never felt like what I saw that evening. And it was a case I had in Tennessee, and it's kind of a long story, so I'll give the cliff notes. But we ended up in a cornfield, and there was another MUFON investigator with me, you know, the witness, a couple of his cousins had come down, but we had, you know, gathered out in the middle of this great big cornfield for a panoramic view, because the witness had seen not only triangles before, but these orange orbs that he had been reporting and had been photographing. So we're in this field, and I'm setting up my equipment, and he literally sees this light coming, and he gets excited. He's telling me this is exactly what I was hoping would happen. Here it comes. Oh my gosh, Chase, I'm so glad you're here. This is what I was talking about. And sure enough, I look up and, you know, I see this one light coming towards us. It's pretty high in the sky, but not as high as a plane. See, it's coming. It's steady. You know, I'm taking those observational notes in my head. It's, you know, not changing speed. It doesn't look like it's moving in elevation or, you know, anything. It was, or altitude. It was just coming. And then I saw two more pop in. And as it's moving forward and closer to the cornfield, you start making out, oh my gosh, these aren't three separate lights. They're all together. This is forming a triangle. And then it was very clear. You start seeing, you know, this object blocking out stars. There's a very, very dark difference. Even in this dark cornfield looking up, you can see, you know, just how big this craft is. It was just amazing, and it's very difficult. I can't say it was gliding, it wasn't flying, it wasn't floating, but it moved. It never changed speed, altitude, anything, and it literally just went over our heads. And there was a point in time, of course, as an investigator, I'm kind of flipping out, Jimmy, because it's right there. Here is something I've been waiting for pretty much most of my career, and I'm picking up tri-field meters. I had four different cameras, different makes and models. Nothing's working. So, you know, I'm thinking it's typical battery drain that we hear about in UFO investigations, paranormal, even Bigfoot. Investigators have reported this phenomenon happening with their equipment, but literally just stood there and watched it leave the view. But it was after it left, you know, I'm all excited looking at the other investigator. You know, we're working for MUFONs, you know, so we're trying to maintain that professional persona, especially in front of our witness. But, you know, on the inside, I'm jumping up and down. I'm so excited. I can't believe it. The other investigator and I are looking at each other. We're like, oh, my gosh, you know, this is so cool. Oh, my gosh. At this point, we realized we were investigators turned into witnesses. But I had turned my attention back to the equipment at this time, and, you know, everything was back online, Jimmy. So, you know, whatever happened to the equipment, everything was just frozen or blocked. I don't know how to describe it other than all my equipment was completely not working. And after the triangle left our view, everything was back online.
We're going to be up against a break here in just about 60 seconds. So before we get there, I have to ask you, the protocol, your checklist, did you have your notepad out? Did you do all of the things that you were supposed to do? Or did you forget everything at that moment?
There was a moment as it was coming closer that I realized, I have to do my job. But it's so hard to take your eyes off of this. I completely understand when witnesses will say, I didn't even think to bring my camera out, or my cell phone was in my pocket. It never occurred to me to take a photo. But the investigator did click in pretty quickly. And I grabbed, I was busy trying to turn everything back on, or, I'm shaking my tri-tail meter like that's going to help. But
hold it right there. We'll pick up the rest when we come back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We are speaking with Chase Kletsky of MUFON. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Just a reminder, this Wednesday, George is going to have on Linda Moulton Howe and Jason Wright of Penn State to talk about this Kepler discovery, KIC 846-2852. That'll be this Wednesday. You guys want to check that out. Also, catch George's internet TV show. It's called Beyond Belief. You get all those dynamic discussions on the paranormal phenomena, conspiracy, and all things unexplained. You can sign up right now for just 99 cents for the first month and enjoy hours and hours of fascinating past shows. And if you want to check out any of the previews, just go to Coast to Coast AM, click on videos. Everything is right there. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Chase Kletsky of MUFON right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. I've got Twitter live to my left. Any questions for myself or any of the guests tonight, Chase Kletsky or Ron Felber, myself, you can just hit me up right there on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Chase, tell me about the SAT team. And again, I keep going back to, the Department of Homeland Security or, the Department of Defense and that model that you have developed there. And now we have the SAT team at MUFON. And how do the two kind of cross-pollinate? Tell me about the SAT team.
I think mostly because of the skill sets of program development. And again, it's more of a boots on the ground mentality and not so much a business model is my forte. But, MUFON's been investigating UFO reports since 1969. Basically, during the decades, it's experienced a steady growth from, a Midwest organization into an international organization. And through that evolution, MUFON's almost constantly had to adapt to the demands of the phenomena that not only hasn't slowed down, but isn't going anywhere anytime soon, that's for sure. But I think it's led to leadership thinking through the needs of the investigators and the public, which is why there are new programs that are brought into place, such as the STAR team or the Evidence Review Board. And the Special Assignment Team is just one of the additions that meets the needs and will formally bring in new cases and new types of witnesses that may not have been possible before.
And what is different from the SAT team from the STAR team?
The team, completely different model. This is a high-performance team. They're high-performance investigators, and each member of SAT brings a skill set and experience to the types of reports that are delicate or considered high security. Basically, we assemble a task force. Just like a police department would bring in specialists or even outside professional advisors or analysis, SAT brings in the same type of personnel, and we react to assigned cases in exactly the same way. Jimmy, even the cases, that we are getting are very, very different, but the way we work them is unique. We have a MUFON collaboration page that gives us an opportunity that we throw a case up on the board and literally the guys go to work. It's innovative, it's awesome, but it's where the whistleblowers or, sensitive personnel, military personnel, senior leadership within the military, diplomats, this is where they can come and kind of come in the back door of MUFON. But MUFON still professionally and formally handles a case. Again, it's We only get cases that are assigned by Executive Director Jan Harzan, International Director Dave McDonald, or the Director of Investigations, which is Steve Hudgens. So it all passes through them. And once they understand the case and think it belongs to SAT, it's on our desk. We're rocking, not even lying, Jimmy. Right now we have 9 active cases. We have 2 in triage and 5 closed. And we're not even a year old yet.
With the case that you witnessed, and you went out as an investigator in Tennessee, and you're there to investigate, and then you have this tremendous sighting. Is that would that qualify for the SAT team?
No, that would definitely stay. It's funny because that case in MUFON, we use valet classification, and it came in as a Category 1, which is the least significant events on our measuring scale. And that case quickly turned into a Category 3, which is our most severe. That would have stayed a STAR team case, absolutely. And it was perfect for the STAR team. SAT team doesn't work the CMS cases or MUFON's case management system. It's where the witnesses will report on MUFON.com the cases or things that they would like to report with MUFON. And those have an amazing system, security system, everything is good to go, and they will be assigned an investigator. The SAT team's completely different. We don't work those cases unless directed or asked to assist by a state director or, you know, Jan or Steve. Basically, we get the cases that need to come through a back door. They're too sensitive. They're explosive. There's information that, you know, when you're dealing with top secret security clearances, these guys may not be comfortable putting things on an internet. You know, there's no reason to feel that way, but they just do. They may choose to want to meet an investigator before they just throw their story, you know, into a database. You know, there's a lot of reasons that MUFON was brilliant in bringing this program or bringing this team and project into light, because we are absolutely going to be garnishing the kind of cases that possibly weren't possibly we were missing with MUFON.
How important is it and how easy is it to report a case? And I know that so many don't get reported. I'm a victim of that. I'm guilty of that myself. I haven't reported and you know, things that I have seen. So much of it just passes by us. How important is it if you see something, and how easy is it to do it?
It's really easy to report anything that you see to MUFON. It's, you know, just the website, MUFON.com. There's tabs at the top on how to report a UFO. And they've set up forms that you just answer the questions, you know, start to finish. You could choose if you, you know, would like to keep your name confidential. And those were the security measures. So the witnesses can have full confidence when reporting their events and experiences with MUFON. The you're right about a lot of people not doing that. They think it's unimportant, or, well, I don't know what it was. It was just a light in the sky. Those are difficult cases to work because there's so much in our skies. They're difficult. And when you report a case to MUFON, you get an investigator. It's not just a database. It's one of the reasons I came back to MUFON. It's, you know, there's something to be said about trying to work together, bring all our information into one area so we can actually do something with it. You know, we have 15 different groups out here, and, you know, if everybody's doing their own thing and not sharing data and conclusions and theories, then how are we going to solve this mystery? We're better together, we're better united, and we're better working in professional and ethical arenas.
You just got back from Australia, and when you go out of country representing MUFON at the level that you do, how is the perception out there on an international sense, and what is your take on that, the way they look back at the United States and MUFON?
I can tell you that my personal experience in Australia, they love American attention. I have never seen a group of people so excited, you know, to have just, you know, a new perspective or you know, things that somebody said, you know, here in Australia, you know, what are they doing in the States? What are they doing in America? Are we on track? They were such an amazing group of people. So many ufologists came out, not just the public. There was, after the conference that we had, there was a UFO Congress, so to speak, that the Victorian UFO Action Group, headed by Ben and Andrew, you know, set up a Congress, getting the top ufologists in that country together in the same room, collaborating on how they're going to work together and make things happen in 2016. It's amazing to watch all of this come into play because we need this. This is exactly what we need. We're going to have debunkers or people that resent the field of ufology and the theories, and there are many reasons for this. We're going to have those divide and conquer mentalities, government officials. Every time we get close, there seems to be this big, ugly story. UFOs aren't going away. Ufologists aren't dying off. Cases continue to come in. MUFON still gets between 900, well, probably maybe let's go to a really slow period, probably 700 to 1,200 reports a month. And just as you mentioned earlier, Jimmy, not everybody's reporting them. You know, this is huge. This phenomena is burgeoning, and it continues, and it has for quite some time.
I don't understand why I went into a complete memory block when I had, you know, a few unusual sightings. And each one, Chase, I'm completely guilty. I didn't pick up the phone and call MUFON. I didn't check into a website. I didn't report it. One case I did, I picked up the phone. But the three or four other times that I've had sightings, I just didn't think of anything. I didn't think of a camera. I didn't think about notes. I didn't think about time of day. I didn't think about MUFON. I was stuck in the moment. Is that the problem that we have with the sightings that aren't reported? Is it that you're stuck in the moment, or is it just that people are too busy in their lives?
It may be a combination of both, but your reaction is very normal. Or people complain all the time, how come we can't get a great UFO video? And you're trying to, you know, record something that's, you know, high in the sky going, you know, shooting across miles per hour, right? Like ridiculous speeds, and you're trying to get it on a cell phone. People do the best they can. But when you see extraordinary things that are not supposed to exist, your mind, you know, it just wants to capture all of it. It's like watching that train wreck, you know. Nobody wants to see it, but you can't take your eyes off it when you're driving by. It's brutal. And I think it's that same sense when you're looking at something that's, you know, it's not supposed to be real, and yet there it is, and you're seeing it, or it's something unusual. That is very common. But as, you know, information gets out there, as MUFON continues to be proactive and, you know, educate the public, there is a website, there are investigators, and there's ways to make things happen. And if you have a UFO experience, especially if it's something that's high security or something you're afraid to talk about, but you feel you need to, there are confidentiality forms, non-disclosure forms. We do everything we can to make sure the witness is comfortable and can trust us. And, you know, that's possibly the most important thing with the SAT team. But it's any MUFON investigator from, you know, the board of directors down. You know, MUFON started, again, Jimmy, just like we started the show, a little Midwest group, and Walt Andrews watched and realized this isn't just happening in, you know, Missouri and around the Midwest. This is, you know, all over the United States, which turned into Peru and Paris and Australia and Greece and, you know, everywhere, Russia, everywhere. And now we have top scientists talking about intelligent life being a certainty. We have religious institutions coming out in front of the issues with religious leaders like the Pope talking about extraterrestrials and baptisms even. Almost fell off my couch. I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
Then we even have, you know, our governments, you know, Podesta. You know, you could just go down the line of top politicians and, you know, people that sat our intelligence board, our defense committees, our, you know, intelligence, you know, basically the intelligence part of not only means, ways and means, but also the information that's coming through, and they're curious. They want to know what's going on. It's a great time to be a UFO investigator. It's an awesome time, you know, to get in there. One of the other problems I see is when you type in UFOs, or say you're brand new to ufology, or you're just curious, it's so hard. What site do I trust? Where do I get my information? And I think that's the other thing MUFON provides, is it's an honest, reputable website that's going to give you everything. There are many out there, Jimmy, but if you're new, you know how difficult it is to find, you know, legitimate information versus, you know, all the, you know, minutia out here. MUFON's a great place to start for honest information. It is a UFO website that's trusted, vetted, and, you know, we've been around since 1969. So then you can filter out, and once you get your colleagues and, you know, make friends and, you know, get a little information under your belt, then you can better decide some of these other sites, because there are many out there giving really great information.
Chase, we have just a few minutes left, and I wanted to get this question, one last question in, which is, we know there is something going on, whether it is black ops, ET technology, sightings, videos, visual, it's all over the place. But there is a cover-up, and there is disinformation out there, and we can't put our finger on it, but I think never before in history are we at a time like we are right now, where now it seems to be coming at us in all directions. Do you feel that? Do you feel what's going on? Is there an electricity? And do you think we're getting a step closer to disclosure?
I do. I don't think disclosure is going to come with the president walking up to a podium and just offering this information to us. I think it's going to take an event. It's going to be an event that they cannot deny any longer. And I think we're going to find more and more. But I do, Jimmy, I do feel like it's coming in every direction. Scientists really don't know anything about UFOs. Or what have our witnesses been saying for the last 50 years? You know, what do they say, you know, happens to the atmosphere when they believe they've seen an object? This might be important to a quantum physics researcher or scientist. And that's what they're starting to understand. They don't know anything about UFOs, and they need to play catch up. So it's great to have, you know, some of this attention and for them to have these realizations, but it is coming in all directions. I do believe something's coming, you know, as far as disclosure or a breaking point, but the discussion's already reached a level, Jimmy, that I wasn't sure I'd see in my lifetime, and I'm thrilled.
I have to ask you before I let you go tonight, your children's book, Are Aliens Really Real? It's something that I've always wanted to do. You know, I'm a parent. You're a parent. How was that book received by other parents?
I was shocked. I really was. It was a book that wasn't supposed to be. My grandson, Ryan, literally asked me these questions. It was something I just kind of jotted down and was going to make a little Shutterfly book or something for the family, which, you know, turned into something else. But these are questions that the little ones are going to ask. He was 5 years old. UFOs are all over their culture. It's in their cartoons, their video games. Plus, he knew what I did. I was very cautious in what I said to him. I love to promote curiosity and for him to understand science and be hungry for that, to look for the answers himself. Almost like the epiphany I got in 1976 reading Eric Von Daniken's book and asking those tough questions. I would love him to do that as well. So I didn't answer the question, but I think what this book provides, especially for little kids that are somehow involved in a UFO case, a sighting, many of these sightings are witnessed by families. And what do you do with the little ones that want to go to school and tell their friends and now they're ridiculed? The book has been helpful for them to know there are other kids asking questions, other kids are curious too. And the innuendos in the book, Royce Fitzgerald is the illustrator, brilliant. He was very clever in putting the little being or the little alien on each page in the park. And while
Chase, we're right up against a commercial. Thank you so much for coming on with us tonight.